And title of his presentation is Contaminated Bacteria and Soil from Transport to Survival and the Indicator of the Indicator.
Thank you very much. Thank you for sitting around. So now actually we'll move away from soil physics. I'm not a soil physicist, I just snuck in here, okay? But hopefully you won't run me out before I finish. So this is pretty much a review of work that's been done over years by many people. And you can see from the list of authors, you know, these tend to be the main authors that actually participate in different little or larger projects that will be presented here. When we got the soil land application of waste and risk to water quality, this is, I try to put something that very generally represents the general dogma of transfer of microbial contaminants from the source to the water sources. So basically, we do have two main parameters that we have to think: transport, and pretty much everything that's here today is transport, you know, quite very detailed. We have persistence of these particles because, of course, these are live particles, so their resilience in the environment is of importance when we look at risk, okay? So, of course, depending on how fast things happen, we may have an acute risk or a chronic risk. Usually, when acute risk, you know, when we are worried about contamination of water resources very, very fast after the source is being applied out to the environment. And for this, probably physics is sufficient to describe most of that. But if we look at long-term risks, then we have to take into account the persistence and we have to understand the biology of the system. Okay? So at that point, we go and, you know, we would probably want to understand what a chronic risk we have associated with this waste application. And of course, both persistence and transport are very complicated mechanisms, and we do have a huge amount of variability induced by what is very simple there, you know, as described as modifiers. We have edaphic, climatic, and management. And of course, we could split each one of these modifiers into hundreds of little elements. Okay. Oops, going the wrong way. Just very, very macro level examples that I'm going through here. On examples, and we start with work that's been done quite a while ago, a decade or so, and we do look at the significance of the interaction between the soil type and the waste type on the transport of microbial particles. This is work coming out of Lysimeter work, and basically it just so the we do have here the bottom of the Lysimeter and just a very simple description of the collection areas. So basically, we did have a large 45 centimeters diameter Lysimeter, and we did split the bottom with a grid so that we were that allowed us to sample these discrete samples from a single Lysimeter. And the results, very simple results here. What we have here, we do have the cumulative distribution of the velocity of the water, soil pore water, to a sandy loam. This is the same distribution for a silt loam. As we go to the next, we're looking at the distribution of velocity for actually bacteria associated with beef manure for the sandy loam. What we have here, we do have the same source for the silt loam. So we do see that. Basically, this is just a description of the macro pore transfer. This is why we do have these differences between the average water flow and the flow, the average velocity at which the microbes move through the soil. And it's just pore size exclusion at work here. And then we go for the next, where they have a different source for the sandy soil. And this, it's a swine manure, mostly water. And then the same thing for the other soil. So this is just shows us the range of variability as we do minimal management changes, okay? and we won't go into the details. A different little project here. What we have here, again, this time we have smaller lysimeters, 10 centimeters diameter by 20 or 25 length, I have to remember. And we have, you know, I say my math stops at arithmetics, okay? So that's why we have very simple equations here. And we don't, I just put it here so we know what it is, because it's nothing really complicated. So what we do have here, we do have filtration coefficients for two soil types to which three waste, organic waste types were applied. And we do have cow manure, poultry manure, sewage biosolids. The dry matter of the two manures, it's about 28%. The biosolid is about 20%. And looking at, again, E. coli as the indicator organism, we see that actually the type of material we use there really drastically alters the percentage of organisms that are retained in the system. Okay? Same experiment, and now we do look at the relative absorption index, and basically it just tells us how much of what we applied percentually stayed in the column. And again, we see that it's relatively similar. The only some distinction should be made about the sandy loam that receives sewage biosolid. And then we see that we have a relatively low filtration coefficient, but a high absorption index. So that means that lay terms means, well, it goes far, but at very diluted concentrations. Another little project looked at, again, a relative absorption index at the different, within different layers in the soil. And here, of course, you know, usually the theory is that if you put something on the soil, most retention will happen in the first maybe centimeter, not really much happens afterwards. And to verify this, we played again with actually in situ lysimeters, and we play with saturated and unsaturated conditions. And what we have here, we have the relative absorption index for the 20 centimeter layer, this is the second layer, 20 to 40 centimeter layer. And we see that under saturated condition, most of retention happens in the deep layer. For the unsaturated conditions, most of the retention happens in the surface layer. Again, variability. Next, we look at what happens with the vadozone hydrology when we apply organic waste. And again, everything is macro scale here. This is from an older project here again. We did have three soil types, two manure types, liquid swine manure, soil cattle. Again, the soils are here. And we basically packed the soil or left it undisturbed. And here we are talking about 5 centimeter columns. Okay, it's basically you have the 5 centimeter bulk density collectors. And we did apply the manure, and then we just pretty much measure the changes in the hydraulic conductivity in them. And then we run some multifactorial analysis, see what seems to be relevant there, you know, for the transport. And if I look at porosity, that's actually, it's interesting because I'm looking, porosity tends to be in most cases of significance for transport, and because we have the level of relevance here. And but what happens when you look at the repacked columns, the porosity is usually negatively related to transport. And why would that be? Just because one of the soil here was a clay soil. And when you repack clay, actually you increase porosity, but it's not porosity that's effectively active for transfer of particulates. So that's why we do have, whenever we repack, the porosity is negatively related to transport. For the soils as they were, we do, of course, as probably, you know, common sense would tell us, yes, porosity seems to be related to transport itself. And then so we go, and we have the clay sand silt, and here we have the two Van Genuchten fitted parameters. We have the alpha and the N. And again, we do have for the alpha, we do have some significance for when no manure is applied, and some significance for liquid manure is applied for undisturbed, and less so for solid cattle manure. It's not really, you know, if you look at the no manure and solid cattle, the parameter is not significant for the repack soils, but it's very significant if I play with the liquid manure. Okay. Surfactant and drainage. And this was something that we had three students and said, let's play with it. And why the surfactant? Biosolids, municipal sewage, before they, you know, are dewatered, we do add surfactants to them, flocculators. Okay? And the question is, well, is that flocculator doing anything once I go out and dump it into, you know, to the soil? And these are 10 by 20 centimeter columns. We pre-saturated them, let them drain, and then we applied manure and irrigated them over 2 hours at equivalent 20 millimeters rate per hour. Okay, and then what we have here, basically this tells us how much of the water left those columns. Okay, and the first column here for each soil represents the no surfactant treatment. So basically we do have just the soil itself. Here we did add, the soil and manure, sorry, I do apologize. Long time, I forgot. So well, we have soil and manure. We did not use biosol because biosol has surfactant added to it as it is. You cannot get biosol with no surfactant. Okay? And then we do have a polyacrylamide non-ionic surfactant and polyacrylamide cationic surfactant. Both of them are used at different facilities as flocculators. And we do, again, see, look at the non-ionic, actually, it did increase the flow on the clay, not really make the big difference on the silt loam, and we are missing the data here for the silt loam. And then when we did play with the cationic surfactant, either to manure or to the irrigation water, then actually we may have decreased actually the amount of water that moved through. Okay, and this is, again, everything has to do with the double layer, has to do with the flocculation in the system, okay, of colloids, flocculation of the material, and then modification of the actual hydraulic conductivity. This is from a field project, and what happened here, basically we do have here hydrologically isolated plots, each of them 0.3 acres in size, and we did have four treatments here. We had control, no treatment. We added dewatered biosolids. We added liquid biosolids incorporated. We added liquid biosolids, which we injected straight at about 10 centimeters into the soil. And then each of these plot was independently tile drained and independently drained. Okay. So what we have here, we just have the profile over a summer. I think this was 2004. And June the 14th is when we put the biosolids on. And then from there on, pretty much we had East Coast that collected the samples whenever we did have an event. And the samples were flow weighted, not timed. Okay? So this is the profile of drainage, the average for the three plots under each treatment. So this is what drained out of the control plot, or control plots, I should say. This is the profile for the dewater plot, profile for the liquid incorporated, for the liquid injected. And I say they are quite different. Because, you know, this is all the water that left the control. We had less water leaving the dewatered, and then even less water leaving the plots that receive liquid biosolids. So this, again, shows you that we did modify the hydraulic properties of the systems just by the simple fact that we apply a different material or we apply the same material in different ways. Okay? And again, you know, that means that actually, surprisingly enough, we increased the storage capacity for the liquid systems, not so much for the dewatered. Okay, next. Electrochemistry at bacterial cell surface charges, and the significance of the chemistry of the suspending liquid, whatever that is. And of course, in reality, suspending liquid, it's always some manure leachate. And what we just have a predictive analysis, and it's a partial least square a regression analysis for two soil types, four bacterial species. Here are the bacterial strains, and the soil types, was a sandy loam and a silt loam. And here we look at what was significant, and basically, these are the parameters related to soil. So if you know a PLS, basically whatever you have in this square and this square, these are modifying parameters but are not driving parameters. Okay, and whatever you have in this curl and this curl are the driving factors. So usually what is here relates positively to the parameter that you look, this relates negatively. So basically we desuspend these organisms in deionized water, bacterial hydrophobicity was very significant, okay, for the retention. We added 0.1 molar sodium chloride, hydrophobicity was still significant here. Okay, as measured. We added 0.45 micron manure filtrate, bacterial hydrophobicity became negatively related to retention. Okay, so the only difference actually between this and this is the same ionic strength here. The difference is that here we have some colloids, you know, some whatever, some colloids, some lipids, some floating around the suspension. And because, you know, it's rather a pain to really measure them accurately and nobody believes you. What, you know, that you measure them properly. Okay. How much? Oh, okay, I'll go fast. Okay, we've done the same thing for particles. So we do have, basically, with the hydrophobic particles, the size was significant. The larger the particle, the lower the transfer. When we had hydrophilic particles, the parameters that drove was the charge, and in the manure filtrate, the charge density became irrelevant. So this tells you something that you do have an interaction there. And I go, now, persistence. I'll just jump over this. I'll go to the final slide, okay? Because basically what we have, I want to show you this just before. Background fecal signal. What I have here, basically a simple treatment. We have fresh soil that receives fresh biosolids. We have fresh sterile soil that receives biosolids. And then we have fresh soil that receives sterile biosolids. And this is incubation over 20 days. And these are the profiles. The message here is, this is where I start initially before I apply the biosolids. Once I apply sterile biosolids, the numbers goes up. And this happened at any depth for a soil that did not receive, at least for 15 years before, manure or biosolids of any kind. So what we can say, well, we do have variability, variability, variability. Can we use this variability in a predictive way? And we have basically sampled for that field, field experiment for the 12 plots, and these are the times we sampled. And we use those in a discriminant analysis, see can we separate the source by using simply four bacteria concentration and two coliphage concentration in the sample. Okay, so I did not put what, you know, of course, the discriminant analysis equation because it's not really relevant. That would change where, you know, when you change the system. But the question was, can it, that, you know, do we have any hope to ever predict it, you know, going this way? And these are the rain events. And as we see, the water biosolids is the green. Most of the time, we were able to assign the right sample to the right source. Liquid biosolids, same thing. Control, relatively same thing. And then actually, surprisingly enough, we were even able to reasonably well separate injected liquid versus incorporated liquid. Okay, just using basically the counts of these six organisms in the sample. Okay, and here I'm ending it. Thank you.
Unfortunately, we don't have time for questions, so we need to move.
Okay.
Next presentation.